the direction's been very, very clear from state premiers in New South Wales and Victoria about the vaccine passport, and that that's going to be something applicable to our industry. So again, we're just trying to share that information and let them know, you know, that, that that is coming.
Today on Dirty Linen, I am really excited about the conversation to follow because it's broad ranging. I know it's going to be juicy and it's going to have lots of practical and actionable ideas as well. We are talking to James Sinclair. He's the CEO and Managing Director of Signature Hospitality Group, which has venues around the country and connections with venues around the world. James, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
Yeah, it's really good to have you here because I know you've got a really broad perspective on the path forward for hospitality because of the connections that your venues have internationally. Just give us a bit of a lowdown on yourself and Signature Hospitality Group and those overseas connections.
Sure. Well, I started the Sporting Globe Bar and Grill over a decade ago, and the first venue was in Geelong. And I'd done that after living abroad for a number of years, and particularly in the US, where I'd seen the sports bar model. And fast forward today, I've grown that brand nationally to 17 locations. And about 4 years ago, I also acquired the TGI Fridays franchise for Australia and New Zealand. And that brand started in New York City in 1965 and has grown successfully to operate in over 50 countries globally, nearly 1,000 locations and 75,000 people globally, operating under, as I said, a licensed franchise model. So in countries all around the world, there's someone like myself that's typically got other brands as part of a larger hospitality group that will also operate TGI Fridays in their nation.
And what's your background? Like, are you a hospo guy for life?
Look, I was actually a finance background, studied finance and economics. I worked for some major finance firms. And as I said, when I was in my young 20s and in America, I fell in love, which is quite easy to do when you're in your early 20s, with chicken wings and beer and sports. And, you know, again, I'd come back to Australia and I had an experience with my brother where we were trying to watch some sporting games, and we crawled up and down Chapel Street and nobody had the game on, and it was really frustrating experience. And again, at that stage, there weren't really dedicated sports offerings, and probably the concept of a sports bar was a bit dingy and sounded like the corner of a pub with a TAB and a bloke in overalls, you know, swearing at the dogs. So that was in stark contrast of experience I'd had, which was very female friendly, great quality food, 60 plus screens, multiple sports vision. And I could see the Australian sporting landscape has always been enormous. It's our number one favourite pastime. And I could see the content of sport growing in Australia. And again, I just thought there really is a opportunity to do in Australia something that's been done well overseas and do it a bit the Australian way.
And what's your favourite sport to watch on the telly, or will you watch anything that's got a ball or some fast running going on in it?
Well, there's so many sports you just can't follow everything, but I certainly love some of the American sports. When I was over there, I became a Giants fan and I love the NFL. In Australia, in Melbourne here, I'm very nervous today because I'm a tragic demon, and actually the Sporting Club, we sponsor the Melbourne Footy Club a small way, so we're very nervous about tonight. And Geelong's my number two AFL team, so I've got a real affinity for them too. So
a couple of horses in the race.
Well, no, I'm definitely on the D's tonight, but okay. Yeah, it's a bit nerve-wracking, and be lovely to see them break the drought if they can make a grand final and do well in that after 57 years.
Well, by the time we get this out, we'll know who's in the grand final, and I certainly hope that Melbourne is there. I love a drought breaker, and as a Carlton supporter, I'm all for those who haven't had recent success managing to get back on top.
Good to hear.
So, James, let's get to it. What do you think the big issues are for you at the moment?
Well, of course, we need clarity on a way out of this pandemic, on a reopening plan. And I think we're all desperate to hear that. Different industry bodies have made different suggestions. And we've now seen Sydney leading with a plan to reopen hospitality at 70% fully vaccinated with certain quotients of capacity. And of course, a vaccine passport. There's been talk of that in Victoria, and we've seen that implemented successfully abroad. So I think that's a really key thing that that we want some certainty around, and businesses are desperate to see that for confidence and to help us plan. And we've got to plan our workforce if that's the way forward.
And I mean, where do you think, speaking of the workforce, how are vaccinations among staff going? I mean, you're not able to mandate it, but what are you doing to ensure that your staff do get vaccinated?
So I think obviously what the governments have flagged that a vaccine mandate or a vaccine passport is coming has really given us some strong incentive to have those conversations with team and honest conversations. So we're certainly explaining about where we see government and the industry going with vaccine passports. And on top of that, we've just shared a lot of government information about the different vaccines that are available, where they can go to get them. And we have surveyed staff to check what their status is. And the overwhelming response is over 90% of them want to get vaccinated. We're struggling to get them all vaccinated. It is hard to get bookings. So we're doing our best to try and find bookings for staff members. And we're also looking at putting on some buses to take them to particular vaccine hubs that may have availability.
Wow, that's a different kind of team trip, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think there are, of course, a few that, have reservations, and we've tried to just provide information and education around that. Again, we would love for people to, make their own decision about that. But we really see that's going to be what is implemented in the industry for a period. And the data that we're seeing from around the world, I guess, means that we have real faith in the science. And I can talk to, in America where TGI Friday started and still has, nearly 500 locations there. They're seeing in the Northeast where a vaccine passport's now been implemented in New York, vaccine rates are much, much higher. Hospitalisation rates are a lot lower. And a recent study done by the CDC over there shows that unvaccinated people in the US are 29 times more likely to be hospitalised when they do have COVID than those who are vaccinated. So that's really compelling. And I think, on a weekly basis at the minute in the US, it's 1 in 100,000 people that are vaccinated are being hospitalised, as I said, compared to 29 times that unvaccinated. So in places like New York where people are getting vaccinated and the vaccine passport's in play, businesses have a lot more confidence and certainty. I think people are bullish. It's easier for staff to get staff availability and they're getting on with it. In the South, sadly, it's not the case. And TGI Fridays have described it to me as the pandemic of the unvaccinated. And TGI's is headquartered in Dallas in Texas. And down in the South there, they're really struggling. They've got quite a stubborn vaccination rate. And there are people getting very, very ill. And including to the point now where tragically they're having to look at pop-up tents with makeshift hospital beds, which is just the furthest thing that we could possibly want for Australia, which is why I guess, we all as an industry and as a community need to get this done.
Yeah, I mean, you don't like to hear about that situation anywhere. It does seem particularly, I don't know if surprising is the right word, because I feel like I'm not surprised by anything at the moment, but it's perplexing that when there are real world examples of how effective vaccination is and how it does lead to businesses being able to reopen and, of course, staff to be able to go to work safely, it's just very strange that people aren't getting on board. But, yeah, I guess there are so many voices and people have so many different opinions in their ears that it can really be hard to get a clear through line.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the communications we all know around the vaccines, particularly AstraZeneca, have been very challenged in Australia. And you compare that with the UK, where there's 88 TGI Fridays there, and they are absolutely booming right now. Off the back of reopening, when you do get enough of the population vaccinated, people are desperate to get back out into hospitality.
Yeah.
We're one of the highest saving rates for households for decades, and we've got huge pent-up demand to get out to venues. So I've got no doubt the demand is going to be enormous when we do get back reopened, and we just really desperately need to do that as quickly as possible, but as safely as possible, and that means achieving as high a rate of vaccination as we possibly can, in my view.
Yeah, and I mean, just to be clear, the AstraZeneca vaccine is the one that was rolled out most commonly in the UK, and so that's the vaccine that's got that country open and trading. What have you heard from your staff here, you know, who I'm assuming are in a younger age bracket for the most part, and have had, you know, been sort of heard all that mixed messaging around AstraZeneca, or, you know, confusing and ever-changing messaging? Are some of them now still, are they holding out for Pfizer? Is that why they're having trouble getting the bookings?
Yeah, there's no doubt the strong preference is for Pfizer. And I think a combination of the messaging that was unfortunate around that early days. And I think on top of that too, I know firsthand examples of staff that have gone to get AstraZeneca and had a doctor tell them, no, we don't recommend AstraZeneca for you, given you are in a younger age category, and that Pfizer is so close. And that's perplexing, because that's really still very mixed messaging from, you know, what we hear from certain avenues, which is the best vaccine is the one that's in front of you right now.
Yeah, and I think that's for some people, and you can understand why, because there has been so much noise around it. For some people, that message just doesn't quite cut through. We're such a vaccinated nation in Australia generally. It is really disappointing that there's been so much fear and confusion that sprung up around something that's been developed to get us, you know, keep us safe and get us back out there enjoying our lives.
Absolutely.
That's just what's happened. So, you know, you want a roadmap. What kind of roadmap would you like to see?
Well, I think having the regions reopen now, specifically, we've got very large venues in Geelong and Ballarat. And, you know, both of those venues have capacity for well north of 500 people, with really large outdoor areas as well. And our beer garden in Geelong is probably the largest beer garden in the CBD there. And again, right now we're limited to 20 people outside. Last year at grand final day, we had a 1-in-2 square meterage rule, and that's only applied to public space. So you must exclude, you know, walkways and waiting area at the bar, and, you know, all the bar areas and back of house space. And that facilitated 108 patrons to be there for grand final day. And I think I'd love to see us get a vaccine passport trialled ASAP in the regions. And I think we should look at 1-in-2 square metres, fully vaccinated grand final day in the regions, and start to really make a move for that. And we need to bring that to Metro Melbourne as soon as possible. I mean, by the end of this month, we've got the majority of the adult population are vaccinated and sitting at home. Fully vaccinated. So, but meanwhile, we've got a huge impost on business, on the economy, on mental health, on a huge range of flow-on detrimental areas. So, I really do think we should be trying in a limited and safe way to engage with fully vaccinated people now. And then certainly we need clear policy, like what New South Wales have done, that says at 70%, this is what we will do, and at 80%, the national roadmap the national cabinet have agreed to says that fully vaccinated people will be exempt from domestic restrictions. So we want to see how that looks.
I mean, at the moment in regional Victoria, you're allowed to have 10 inside and 20 outside. Are you even opening under those terms?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, our business has taken the approach to try and trade for takeaway throughout the pandemic too. And we've done that for engagement of staff and engagement with the community. You know, I just think it's so negative to have our doors shuttered completely. And even if there is some economic costs involved in that, for me, the cultural benefit, the to just have, even if it is a faint heartbeat ticking through these closures, has been, you know, something really important to us philosophically.
Oh, well, that's good. But, yeah, I mean, I can imagine that 10 people inside some of your venues would be pretty still very skeletal. But it's, so just
the
to
atmosphere
be
is not right, and you know, it's completely uneconomical to do it. But again, you know, and that's why the JobKeeper program was so much better than the current system, where, you know, people are incentivized to sit at home and collect $750 tax free, when under JobKeeper we could have been giving them that money to engage them in some form of meaningful work, even if it is, you know, doing marketing and promotional things for when we reopen, preparations, anything, because people desperately need some engagement for their well-being.
Yeah, no, it makes a massive difference. Although I do think that the disaster payment is taxable, isn't it? But not that that's really the point of what you were saying, but yeah.
I think the 750 is not taxable. It was taxable under the JobKeeper, but this 750 is not, is my understanding.
I don't think so, because I think it just comes in as a social security payment. Anyway, that's not really, it's not the main point. But so you're asking really only to increase those numbers outside at this point?
I think that's the first step that we could do safely and we could do quickly. You know, I would love to see that plan put in place, you know, effective immediately. You know, outdoor transmission seems to be something that when we listen to experts, medical experts around the world, they're all suggesting that outdoor is much, much safer than indoor. And again, where we've got low case numbers and dealing with fully vaccinated patrons, that would seem a fairly safe step to take.
And what about your staff? Are you in a position to staff those businesses with fully vaccinated staff at the moment?
Sure. Given the lower numbers and capacity restrictions, we are for sure right now. You know, we are working really hard to get people and our team and a fully vaccinated workforce as soon as possible. I do think in some limited way it would be great to allow some staff in settings to have a single dose and be able to partake, mainly because we know the younger generation, which typically work HOSPO, have been the last to be allowed to get vaccinated. So naturally that's taking a little bit of time. And we saw in Sydney, it was mandated from higher risk LGAs, staff were required to have one dose to work. And we had that with many of our staff. And that was extended on two different occasions just to ensure they'd had ample time and opportunity to actually get vaccinated. So we need probably to start looking at that, because that provides some real clarity. And then I think we need to prioritise some vaccinations for our younger people. And I know you had a fantastic epidemiologist as a guest recently and was an advocate for that sort of 20 to 39 age group to be vaccinated as a priority, because they are the ones out there in the community the most. And what we're seeing is 2/3 of case numbers are coming from the sub 40 category.
Yeah, it just is so logical to prioritise people in that age group. They're the frontline workers. They're mixing among themselves. Mary Louise McClaws, the epidemiologist that you refer to, has been saying for a long time that we needed to prioritise those people. So, yeah, better late than never, I guess. So do you see the notion of saying that your staff members are fully vaccinated, you know, when that's possible and to whatever extent? Do you see that as a selling point for your businesses?
Look, I think it will give the community confidence for sure to come back to hospitality, and I think it's going to be something that we see quite universally. So, Yes, in short, absolutely, it will be a positive and provide confidence, and that will help us all.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you been? Have you had any pushback on your position by anti-vaxxers?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are certain people that have, you know, grave concerns. And again, we've been extremely respectful to try to understand what they are and share information. I mean, ultimately, you know, the direction's been very, very clear from state premiers in New South Wales and Victoria about the vaccine passport, and that's going to be something applicable to our industry. So again, we're just trying to share that information and let them know, you know, that is coming. And then, you know, again, it's about health concerns. You know, people are concerned about what are the risks. So sharing information around that. And I think, you know, the science of what these vaccines have been able to do, how they've come about, what the actual incident rate is of adverse reactions. Sharing all that information really helps appease people. And then on top of that, talking about the really huge benefits for the community of having a highly vaccinated population. Because even for younger people, and a common thing young people might say is, well, I'm young and healthy, and if I get COVID, I see the risk is very, very low for something detrimental to happen to me. Well, you know, we're a community that's far broader minded than that. And there are, unfortunately, so many people who are who have underlying conditions or maybe, you know, compromised immune systems, that are younger, kids that are younger, or elderly people that are affected. So if you're not getting vaccinated and doing it for yourself, we need to be doing it for them. Because, again, I know a case of quite a young person who's been double vaccinated, and unfortunately they're autoimmune and they're not showing antibodies, and they are at high, high risk of death. And nothing they can do about it other than try to associate only in safe environments with vaccinated people.
Mm,
so we need to be socially minded. And you know, if you can do it, if we can do that together, again, my personal view is, you know, it's the right thing for us to be trying to do.
So, James, I think, you know, this time last year we were probably also asking for a roadmap and looking for a way forward. You know, what do you reckon of pandemics? They're a bit challenging, aren't they?
There's no doubt. It's, as you said, it's very fluid. But I think we're at great advantage in Australia. I mean, the learnings that we've had from this have been just tremendous. You know, being an island nation, being a country that generally embraces science and embraces vaccines, the great development of mRNA vaccines, and I mean, it's just been incredible to see. And I've got real confidence of, and again, our scientists to be able to continue to adapt these vaccines as we see variants. And then ultimately, you know, we need to just get through and do everything we possibly can. Once we're double vaxxed and at 80%, we will be just about the highest in the world of any country when we did reopen. Most countries reopened before that. So I think we will have done, you know, a really tremendous job around that. We've got great learnings. Again, when we look around the world, we know that boosters are required for Pfizer, and we've got planning around those as well. So I guess when I say, for example, when I talk to some of the senior leadership in businesses where we're linked to overseas, they actually look to Australia and are somewhat envious that we have such a high rate of our population participating in that, and that we will get to 70 and 80% fully vaccinated and reopen in a safe manner. So that they are genuinely envious that we have that, because a lot of countries are far, far more divided than what we are, and won't be able to enjoy the standard of living that we will once we do get to this 80% level.
I love that. So, James, is there anything about your businesses or your venues that you reckon is going to be better than it was in 2019?
Well, look, there's no doubt that the digitisation in our our whole industry has increased tremendously. So we launched early on contactless ordering, and I think, you know, we'll still have a hybrid model. We really value face-to-face, you know, connection with guests. So it will be the guests and customers' choice whether they want to order contactless digitally through their own device or whether they want to order traditionally through a server. But I think that provides, you know, that hybrid model provides some real efficiencies for our business, and it provides, you know, greater flexibility and choice of service for guests. That's a great positive. I think we really do appreciate just how important our industry and venues are to the fabric of our communities. So I think everybody will fall in love again with their local pub and restaurants. And again, we've got so many occasions, birthdays and celebratory events to catch up with loved ones. So I think that will really benefit. The other thing that I guess from the pandemic that we've been very fortunate in with my business, most of our locations are suburban based, and we have seen obviously a lot of people working from home more and staying, a bit more suburban. So we're seeing that's really helped us and helped our takeaway trade. And I think, again, when we get reopened, that trend of people working more from home will benefit suburban venues ongoing. And then takeaway overall, I see, our focus and goals around takeaways is for that to be incremental revenue, and certainly not cannibalize dine-in custom. Dine-in will always be our core focus, but we really see that we can grow revenue above and beyond. And pre-pandemic, takeaway was less than 1% of our business, and I can envisage ongoing us getting back to where we were pre-pandemic and beyond for dine-in very soon, and having an additional 10% revenue of takeaway above and beyond that. So that's been an actual silver lining that will come out of this whole pandemic as well.
That's really interesting. I mean, who do you think would continue with the takeaway? I'm sort of envisaging, you know, it's a late sporting game, the kids are in bed, it's too hard to get a babysitter, you'd get your wings delivered. Is it that kind of thing?
Well, I think sometimes, it's Friday night and maybe you can't be buggered to go to the pub work's been big that week. So you might want to just sit home and still have that similar experience and engage on the couch. So that's okay too. And look, in the US, pre-pandemic, TGI Fridays would have seen between 20 and 25% of their revenue as to go. Ah. And post-pandemic, it's sitting at about 40. So
wow.
It has grown immensely. And if you think about restaurants and the predictions in the US over the next, 5 to 10 years, is that 80% of compound annual growth rate will come from to go, not from dining in venue on premise. So I think, we do tend to head the way of America. We're usually 5 or 10 years behind in some of the trends, but I think we will see that. And as I said, I've got no doubt in 5 to 10 years that takeaway will be a strong part of our industry. And we just need some more competition around the delivery partners and that whole structure, because that's been something that Australia's been really challenged with compared to other parts of the world.
Yeah, definitely. So what platforms do you use to get your takeaway to people?
Look, right now we're using multiple. I think we're on with Uber, with Menulog, DoorDash, and Deliveroo. So we do, and depending on the market we're in around the country, some of those platforms are stronger than others. Delivery driver and shortages of those specifically is probably one of the biggest challenges we've seen as an industry, which is, tremendously frustrating when we're in a pandemic, where our revenue's already decimated, we're just getting by, keeping the lights on takeaway, and then you've got, unfortunately, orders that get cancelled on you where you've cooked the food and customers unhappy and we're at a loss on it. So, certainly labour shortage in that space is a problem. And that's really the greatest challenge that I see going forward over the next 12 months. As I said, I'm actually really bullish, optimistic that once we get to this 80% target, customer demand will be really strong. I think we will be able to live with the virus. And again, seeing examples around the world, and some of the learnings and where they have had to go back into lockdowns, I think has been there's learnings and things that we can avoid from what they've done, and making sure that we've got boosters ready, and that we are really at those very high rates, and obviously now being very cognizant that Delta does affect kids. I think our strategy will combat all of those, and hospitality will get a run, and 2022 will be fantastic. So we really look at that. This next year ahead, very, very bullishly. And staff is our number one priority, looking after our staff that we've got right now, ensuring that they are staying positive, ensuring they're staying connected with us, engaging in training, and are ready to go when we reopen, that they're able to partake if we've got a vaccinated passport that is required and they need to be vaccinated. So doing all those things. And then again, I know the whole industry, we've been decimated. You've got student visa holders, student visas in Australia, there was about 700,000 of them. We're down to under 400,000 now. They were a big part of our industry. The skilled visa holders that left Australia, and they're really hard to replace. We've got to get them back. And that's going to take some time to do that safely. And then the people that, unfortunately, good people that have left our industry because, we've been shut for so long that they may have found other careers or other aspirations. That's a challenge. And then normally we would have had these last 2 years to develop people and team members that would be stepping up into more senior positions. So we've had a period of 2 years where we've lost that ability to develop in the same way that we used to be able to. So staff is definitely going to be on everybody's tongue in our industry for the next 12 months.
Yeah, but what I love about what you're saying is that you've got that optimism that's at the base of it all, and then all the other challenges you're talking about, they're all things that you can invest in and, try to make the best of. So I think, in the end, when you've invested in new staff members and hopefully we can get some more coming in from overseas eventually, then the industry is going to be, it's all sort of on the up, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think overall we have fared very well as an industry. I'm really proud of the way the industry's come together and supported each other and got through it. And the resilience seen from my team, I'm just incredibly proud of, and certainly colleagues in other businesses. I think overall we're in a resilient bunch and determined, and our industry will be very bright in the future.
Good words, James. It's been really a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your strategies and your optimism and your investment in the industry. It's really great. I wish you all the best for powering on, climbing out of this, and a wonderful year ahead.
Thanks for allowing me to share.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Cheers, Danny.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.